taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read, we study the Constitution, we teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. I'm looking at the news, and there's part of me that just wants to give you a big old fat I told you so. There are news items and information coming out that I've heard people saying for months and sometimes almost two full years. And we were called conspiracy theorists or misinformation, disinformation providers. And now it's starting to find out that, you know what? Maybe they were true. And in fact, many of them were true. You know, I was listening to some celebrity talking about something on some podcast, and they were saying, you know, gee, you look at these truckers up in Canada, and you know, they're going through all of this mess and causing all this havoc simply because they don't want to take a shot, and you know, they don't want to protect their neighbor or whatever nonsense they were putting out. And, you know, I'm the kind of guy that likes to yell back at the TV and whatnot. And I'm like, no, it's because they don't want to be a medical experiment. And that's, you may have noticed over the last couple of weeks, I don't simply refer to the jabs as, you know, we don't know about it. This is a medical experiment. When I did the article on the Nuremberg Code, and I saw what was really going on, it cemented in my head that, yeah, this is medical experimentation on a global scale, and there's going to be problems. America has its own dark history with medical experimentation, human experimentation without consent. Tuskegee, anyone? So when I started seeing some of these articles popped up, I started collecting them again. I thought today would be a good chance to sit down and talk about some of them. For example, I found this one article talking about how board-certified funeral directors and embalmers are coming forward, and they're telling of how they're seeing vaccinated bodies with veins and arteries that are clogged with a strange, rubbery, worm-like clots. Sounds pretty nasty. So as I started reading a bit further, I found, Richard Hirschman, a funeral director and embalmer from Alabama with over 20 years of experience in the field, said in recent interviews that he had never seen anything like it until around the middle of 2021. See, after the mass injections of experimental COVID vaccine began, he says his colleagues in the field are seeing the same thing, and the numbers are increasing. Now remember, they kept saying that it was safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. So we don't know if it's safe because there's not been any long-term studies of it. And we don't know if it's effective because, well, it doesn't seem to be very effective. If it's so effective, why do you keep needing boosters? Now, in an interview with Stephen Kirsch, Mr. Hirschman said that 37 of 57 bodies, 65% of the bodies he's examined, had these suspicious clots. Now, prior to the quote-unquote vaccines, he said blood clots in patients who died of COVID were seen, but they appear to be more typical and not alarming, either in the numbers that he's seeing or just the odd construction that he's seeing. Now, Mr. Hirschman has gone public, along with another colleague, a Kerry Watkins, with over 50 years' experience. And he's collaborated the story. Anna Foster, an embalmer from Missouri with 11 years' experience, revealed in an interview that 93% of her 30 cases died due to unusual clots completely filling their vascular systems. Funeral director John O'Looney from Milton Keynes in England. He's also blowing the whistle, saying there's an alarming increase in the number of thrombosis deaths. O'Looney said in an interview that it's not just two or threefold increase. It's around 500 or 600%, 5 to 6 times. He said 9 out of 10 of these cases were vaccinated. He says, I've got doctors and police ringing me, nurses ringing me, all saying the same thing. It's a total lie. On our media, they're saying the hospitals are full of non-vaccinated. That is a total fabrication. It's the polar opposite. 9 out of 10 patients in there, full of blood clots, are the vaccinated. I've heard that from so many professionals that I've lost count. So whether you choose to believe it or not, it makes it no worse. That's the truth. This is the reality. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Now, Mr. Hirschman told Conservative View podcast that he was actually initially hesitant to come forward because any information that questions the government's mandate, the government's narrative, gets mocked, ridiculed, and his reputation would suffer. But as another journalist, Kirsch, pointed out, there's no other explanation for what's happening, at least not that they can think of. He said it pretty much has to be the novel injectable product, first used in 2021, that results in blood clots and is injected into well over 50% of the population. There's only one drug that fits that bill, the COVID vaccines. Now, Steve Kirsch, the executive director of the Vaccine Research Center, as quoted as saying, so let's say the actual rate of the vaccine-caused death is 40% of all death, which is less than the 65% that Hirschman is seeing. The CDC says around 65,000 people die a week, so that would be 26,000 people a week killed by the vaccine. He started noticing these deaths in May. They could have started sooner. So let's say it's been only the last 6 months to be conservative. 26 weeks times 26,000 deaths a week, it's 676,000 vaccine-related deaths. Now, there's a little bit of statistics in there that I want to see some better numbers on. But it certainly does bring into question just how safe these vaccines are. But what's interesting is these aren't normal blood clots. Mr. Hirschman took one of them and washed it off. And he found the worm-like material in that was left from the clot once he washed it. He said, quote, that white fiber stuff just isn't normal. Typically, a blood clot is smooth. It's blood that's coagulated. But if you squeeze it or touch it or try to pick it up, it generally falls apart. But this white fiber stuff is pretty strong. It's not weak at all. You can manipulate it. It's very pliable. It's not hard. And it's not normal. He says, I don't know how anybody can live with this inside of him. Yet any question about the safety of these genetic experiments, of the genetic therapy, the gene therapy that the mRNA vaccines are, is treated as conspiracy theory. But again, it's not simply a single doctor. It's dozens of doctors, or not doctors in this case, funeral workers, funeral directors, embalmers, people dealing with the dead. Now, is this dispositive? Is this proof that the vaccines are dangerous? No, but it's another example of why they need to be safety tested. They need long-term safety testing, not the mass hysteria-induced human experimentation that's going on in this country and in the world. We don't know what's causing these odd clots, but are you prepared to take a chance? If we find out, as we're finding out, that once again, there are more problems, there are more, I heard this statistic and it boggled the mind. on average, I think they say there's 600 to 800 adverse vaccine effects reported to VAERS every year. 600 to 800, I think, was the number. But there are over 26,000 deaths reported just from this vaccine, which means from the quote-unquote COVID vaccines, there are more deaths reported in VAERS than in every vaccine that had been part of the VAERS system beforehand. To me, that's a sign that there's something wrong. And again, all this for a disease that has a 98%+ survival rate for the vast majority of the American people. This has been an irrational overreaction to a disease. And sadly, that fear-based response, I believe, has led many people to make some very deadly, very dangerous decisions, and they're going to have to live with some very serious long-term consequences. And it's not just from the fake vaccines. There has been a push since the beginning of this nonsense for everyone to mask, especially for children to mask. And there were those who warned that wearing masks for long periods of time is not safe. It's and is dangerous to children, especially to children. And now we see a peer-reviewed study that shows that wearing masks for hours a day has very serious side effects. Now, think about it. For years, people who tend to wear surgical masks for a long period of time are, well, surgeons. That's why they're called surgical masks. In the conclusions for this study, they say, considering our findings, pulse rates of the surgeons increase and SpO2 decrease after the first hour. This early change in SpO2 may be either due to facial mask or operational stress. Now, since a minimal decrease in saturation at this level reflects a large decrease in PaO2, our findings may have a clinical value for health workers and the surgeons. So they're dealing with the difference in it's your oxygen levels. It's how much oxygen you have in your bloodstream. And what they're saying is even wearing a mask for an hour has an impact on your blood oxygen level. And that impacts the, you know, your ability to concentrate, how you think. But what does it mean for children who've been wearing masks for 6-7 hours a day? In a German medical study of 26,000 children, they found lower levels of blood oxygen leading to behavioral changes. Now, in this in a German study, they asked parents to record observed results of changes in behavior from their children. By October of 2020, they had over 20,000 people that had made reports. Now, in the published report, these are parents, again, of almost 26,000 children, and the average wearing time of a mask was basically 4.5 hours a day. And 68% of the parents reported irritability, some variation of irritability, headaches, difficulty concentrating, less happiness, reluctance to go to school, malaise, impaired learning, drowsiness, and fatigue. Again, peer-reviewed studies, not simply anecdotes, not simply data that's been pushed out, but yet we're still, in some places, masking our children. Or a German study that found that oxygen deprivation from wearing masks causes permanent neurological damage. This is done by Dr. Margaret Gries-Brisson. Permanent neurological damage. And yet we still have schools that require the children to wear masks. Now remember, CDC data, the chance of a child dying from COVID is statistically zero. Last time I checked, there had been less than 400 children in the entire country over the last 2 years that have died, that have been listed with COVID on their death certificates. The numbers are so small that as a percentage, they round to zero. And what are going to be the long-term effects on our children? See, if this is true, if wearing masks for long periods of time can decrease your oxygen level, or even worse, increase your carbon dioxide level. See, 250 to 400 parts per million is kind of the normal background CO2 concentration in outdoor air. Between 400 and 900 parts per million, you see that in indoor spaces with good air exchange. Above, 1,000 to 2,000, people start complaining of drowsiness or just poor air quality. 2,000 to 5,000, people complain about headaches, sleepiness, stagnant, stale, stuffy air, poor concentration, increased heart rate, slight nausea. 5,000 parts per million is the legal limit, the absolute maximum for workplace exposure in an 8-hour workday. And 40,000 parts per million is considered immediately dangerous to life or health and will result in brain damage and eventually death. Yet there's videos on YouTube that shows how easy just wearing a simple mask, properly fitted mask, can quickly raise your CO2 levels. Recent studies published in the journal Natural Sustainability thought that CO2 levels would release 5,000 parts per million and they would affect human health. But they're seeing as high as 100,000 parts per million in certain masks. Now, the importance of oxygen saturation, the dangers of CO2, they're nothing new. This isn't something that people didn't know about. We've known about this for years. Anybody watch the movie Apollo 13? Remember trying to fix the square peg in the round hole? A scrubber to remove CO2? We know how dangerous this is. Yet we're exposing our young children to it. These are going to have long-term consequences, but we haven't bothered to think about that. We haven't stopped to say, what are the long-term consequences, and is it worth it? That's probably the biggest thing. Is it worth it? Is the gain worth the danger? Now, I suppose if you had a child that was extremely susceptible to COVID or similar diseases, maybe it is. If you are elderly or have a other serious underlying medical condition that would make you susceptible to COVID, maybe it is. But for the vast majority of the American people, medically, it makes no sense. The cost-benefit analysis is irrational. So how did we get here? Knowing the dangers of wearing masks long-term, even though there have been media people and politicians telling us, no, there's no danger to wearing a mask. That's a lie. But how did we get here? How did we get to the point where hundreds of millions of Americans would voluntarily walk up and become a medical experiment for a drug that has not had proper testing, has not passed full FDA approvals? Well, the answer is simple. Fear. Fear. That's all it took, is fear. All you had to do was scare the American people enough, and they would throw reason and rationality out the window for the hope of some miracle cure. In fact, it's interesting. The South African doctor who first discovered the Omicron variant made a statement. She refuses to create fear by hyping the variant's threat. She said, I cannot make a disease worse and create fear out there. See, that's the difference. Some doctors have decided not to create fear, not to hype the fear-mongering. Yet, so many more have done the exact opposite. In an interview with News Not Noise, she described pressure she faced from public health authorities worldwide who want to portray the new dominant variant as more severe than it actually is, at least what that she's been witnessing. She said to her secretary, just give me another Nexium. That's how I survive and stick to her guns. She's being pressured to feed into the fear. She says, it's not there, you know. And how many of us, how many people have been talking about, look at the data, look at the numbers, look at the CDC's own data. This is not that dangerous. If you are a relatively healthy person, this is not that dangerous. There's no reason to lock yourself away, no reason to wear a mask, take a shot, or do anything different than basic human hygiene. But you see, that doesn't promote the agenda. And we see scientists and politicians pushing this idea that, oh, if you've got a headache or a scratchy throat, run to the hospital. A few weeks ago, I talked about how Vermont is being, their emergency rooms are being flooded with people who simply tested positive for COVID. They had no symptoms, but they took an in-home test and it came up positive and they immediately rushed to the emergency room. Now, why would you run to the emergency room if you had no symptoms? Because you've been terrified. You've been told that the mere presence of Omicron in your body is a death sentence. Or look at the studies where they asked people on the street what they believed the death rate of COVID was. And the numbers were 10 times the actual truth. They were thinking, you know, 40% of the people are dying from COVID. No. 1.6, 1.8%? It stokes the fear. There's a saying that if you can keep your head while all those around you are losing theirs, you obviously don't know what's going on. Well, I think that's wrong. I think in the COVID era, if you can keep your head while everyone else in the country is losing theirs, you've actually looked at the data. You've actually learned to think for yourself, to not be led down this garden path. I remember a book that was written, State of Fear, by Michael Crichton. I remember reading it many, many years ago. And while it is fiction, he used so much data from the real world dealing with climate change. The point was, the way you control a people is you scare them. COVID is not a medical pandemic. It never has been. COVID is a political pandemic. It is an attempt to scare people to do things they would never otherwise do. And if you take one quick look north of the border, or in Australia, or Austria, or New Zealand, or in California, or New York, you know exactly why COVID fear has been stoked to such a high level. It gives those politicians the excuse to exercise illegal powers, because so many people will do anything because they're afraid of the big, bad boogeyman, COVID. You know, the amazing thing is, when I actually started reading the data, when I actually kept up with what was with the, not the hype, not what someone said, but the actual data coming out of the CDC, the actual studies coming from around the world, I didn't have to be afraid. I didn't live my life in fear. I didn't stop traveling because I was afraid I'd get something. It's mostly because everyone else is shutting everything down. I've lived a comfortable life this last 2 years because I did not give in to the fear and I did not give in to the hate. But I stopped and I looked at the data and I tried to rationalize what was going on. I tried to understand it and put a rational effect to it. And I looked at it and said, it's just not that scary. Now, I know a lot of people who think I'm crazy. I know a lot of people who have pushed to have me banned or call me grandma killer. But as I look at the data that keeps coming out, every time data comes out, every time peer-reviewed studies come out, I find out that I was more right than wrong. And that's a comfortable place to be. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, do me a favor. Head over to constitutionstudy.com. That's where you'll find everything I'm working on. And if you want, you can sign up for the newsletter. I only send out one newsletter a month. Once in a while, I'll send out an extra post if something important happens. But you can hit the checkbox and you can get notified of each and every post I put on the website. You don't have to worry about algorithms. You don't have to worry about censorship. You don't have to worry about deplatforming. I will email you a link to my article when it gets published. And again, that's at constitutionstudy.com. You can also ask a question. You can have me answer it on the radio. You can donate to the cause. You can check out my videos. All of it's right there. All of it's free for you to use. All of it's free for you to share. Also, please check out healthycell.com. You know, sometimes I know a lot of people, they have a hard time sleeping. Well, Healthy Cell has a formula called REM sleep. Helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep better so you can wake up refreshed. It's a pill-free supplement. It's a travel-ready gel pack. Just take this pack and in a little bit, you're getting drowsy and ready to fall asleep. Now, since you're an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. All you have to do is go to healthycell.com, put your order together, try REM Sleep or any of their products. When you go to checkout, use the code OUTLOUD and they'll give you 20% off. So again, that's healthycell.com. Just use the code OUTLOUD at checkout to get 20% off your first order.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The American Constitution is the most magnificent document on earth. We are America Out Loud. Join us as we celebrate the genius of our founding fathers. You can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Dr. Vladimir Zelenko knows a thing or two about the immune system. He was nominated for a Nobel Prize for his early COVID-19 treatments, and now he's offering his Z-Stack supplements to our listeners at a discount. Just go to zstacklife.com/freedom. That's zstacklife.com/freedom.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we're looking back at the consequences of COVID-19 and the policies around it. And we're looking to see who was right and who was wrong. Now, I don't want to say I told you so. Well, I kind of do want to say I told you so. Because we now have a report that our good old friends at the CDC are only publishing a small fraction of the data it has collected, at least according to sources that told the New York Times such. You see, the CDC has been collecting and breaking down data on hospitalizations by age, race, vaccination status, and whatnot, well, for more than a year. But you see, most of that data hasn't been published. Now, it makes you wonder why. I mean, the CDC is a government agency. We're not dealing with private data. This is public data. Why is it not being published? And why is the data that is being published so selective? For example, a couple of weeks ago, the CDC published booster effectiveness data in adults over the age of 65. However, did not publish hospitalization numbers for adults 18 to 49. Could it be because, well, the numbers were too small and didn't look good? Some states have been sharing wastewater data, which apparently can be used to predict oncoming COVID surges. I'm not quite sure how that one works. But they have been posted. However, well, the CDC did not begin posting that data until earlier in February. So we have sources telling the New York Times that the CDC is only publishing a fraction of the data, a tiny fraction of the data, which means authorities have been forced to rely on data from other sources like Israel to determine the efficacy of the vaccines. But it also means that the CDC information is being crafted. See, it's not like the CDC isn't talking, but they're crafting the message. They're telling us things, but they're not providing the data. And that should raise some red flags. When I used to teach Sunday school, I used to always tell my students, the hardest question I will ever ask you is to answer why. You say something is true, I want to know the why. Prove it. Show your work. Well, that's exactly what the CDC is not doing. It's providing guidance, but it's not showing its work. And that should be, again, that to me is inherently untrustworthy activity. We're dealing with what is supposedly a public health organization that is concealing data from the public they're supposed to serve. Why? Well, the CDC says it doesn't want to publish certain data because, well, it could potentially lead to misinformation. In other words, when they say, why do they only publish the hospitalization data for 65 and older? Well, we don't want misinformation. In other words, the CDC is admitting is they are curating, they are crafting, they are massaging the data to get information that they want out. Now, they call that, you know, good speak, good information. And anything that contradicts their narrative is misinformation. But if the data leads to misinformation, could it be that your information is wrong? Now, there's one thing to say, well, there are different ways of interpreting data. And that could be true. There's a lot of data. You know, we don't want to confuse correlation with causation and a lot of other things. You know what they say? There's, you know, lies, darn lies, and statistics. There's a lot of that out there. But we're dealing with a public agency. And they're saying, we don't want to release the data because we don't want you to come to conclusions we don't like. They call it misinformation, but what they're really saying is we don't want you to come to conclusions we don't like. Now tell me, is the act of a public servant or someone who thinks that they're a public master? See, we want, the people want data. And I understand, you know, there's a lot of people, myself included, that wouldn't understand all of the data. But there are also experts. There are experts outside the CDC that can look at that data, interpret it, analyze it, and then explain it to the rest of the people in a way they can comprehend. And the CDC is hiding that data. Why? Doctors, people who are supposed to be making, helping you make medical decisions, can't rely on the CDC because they're not getting all the data. So they've got to rely on, again, information from Israel and other foreign countries to make recommendations. Why? Why keep it a secret? Why not expose it to the light of day? Why not expose it to scrutiny? Because the CDC apparently does not want you to get data that doesn't comply with their narrative. Now, for how long have people been saying that the CDC is not telling you the whole truth? They're not giving you all the data. They're not giving you the information you need to make an informed decision. Well, they've just admitted it. We don't put out all the data because we don't want you to come up with what we call misinformation. But you see, the government doesn't get to determine misinformation, at least not in this context. We're not dealing with the, you know, reporting on government actions. We're talking about data the government is collecting about the American people. They don't get to determine what is and isn't misinformation. They don't get to determine what you are and are not allowed to hear. They're not allowed to squelch data they find inconvenient. The very fact that they're getting away with this is because we, the people, are wimps. We've given up the mantle of citizen. We've given up the authority of being self-governed. We have turned ourselves into subjects of government, subjects of Washington, D.C., rather than its master. The CDC gets away with this because we, the people, let them get away with this. This is our fault. Yes, the CDC is conspiring to hide from the American people data. They get away with it because of the American people allowing it. It is ultimately our fault. If the buck stops anywhere, it stops with the American people. And I think that is a fundamental change from the design of the nation. See, we were electing servants. We're a republic. Most of our state constitutions say power is inherent in the people. We delegate it to governments, and we are to hold them accountable. We're to hold the reins, and we've let go. And we're dealing with a runaway wagon. And we keep sitting back going, oh dear, what are we going to do? Well, it's time to take the reins. CDC doesn't have the legal authority to deny the people. First, it doesn't have a legal authority to exist. So that data should be published. Now, I agree. People who understand the genomics, the virology, the immunology better than I do should have a chance to look at this data and analyze it, and then let them explain it to the American people. And the people who do that the best will be the ones that we listen to. But if they're collecting this data and they're hiding it from it, they are manipulating the American people. Whether that is their ultimate intention or not, they are manipulating the American people. Is that how you want to live? Do you want to live as a manipulated subject of bureaucrats in Washington? But not all the news is bad news. There is some examples of justice prevailing in society. Well, for example, the other day, a judge in Georgia, a federal judge, issued an injunction blocking the military's vaccine mandate from being forced on an individual. See, the officer in question applied for a religious exemption back in the fall of 2021, only for her request to be denied. Her initial appeal was also denied, and she was given 3 days to choose between getting the vaccine or early retirement. Ultimately, she chose to retire after 25 years. In his opinion, Judge Self asked the question, what real interest can our military leaders have in furthering a requirement that violates the very document they swore to support and defend? I have to say, I often have bad things to say about judges, because there are a lot of judges I think need a basic reading comprehension program. But this judge's question is the right one. What is the interest in military leaders requiring that they making requirements to violate the very document they swore to support and defend? The judge went on, all Americans, especially the court, want our country to maintain a military force that is powerful enough to thoroughly destroy an enemy who dares to challenge it. However, we also want a military force strong enough to respect and protect its service members' constitutional and statutory religious rights. This ruling ensures an armed service continues that our armed services continue to accomplish both. Well, I'm sorry, Judge, you issued an opinion, not a ruling. Judges don't rule. Sorry. But at least you and all you've really done, if I read this correctly, is issue an injunction. Say this goes on hold until the case is completely worked its way through court. It's a stay. It's a temporary reprieve while this goes through the legal process. So we strip away the hype, we strip away the misinformation, the concept that the judges rule, and we find a judge that says, listen, this doesn't make sense. You are violating this person's constitutional rights, constitutionally protected rights, rights protected also by the laws of the United States. They're technically committing a federal crime, and he's put a temporary stop to it. Now, this is one of many cases where stays have been issued. Again, it's not an all or nothing. It hasn't all been good. It hasn't all been bad. But remember, in this case, at least it makes sense because you're dealing with a federal officer, a military officer, being denied rights by their commander-in-chief, the President of the United States, and the military that he commands. It's right for this to be heard in federal court. But we're also realizing that you're asking the federal government to protect this officer from the federal government. So this is not over. And with all the hype and wonderful, yay, rah, rah, look, we got it right, all that was issued was an injunction. There's no law passed. There's not even precedent sent. All you have is a single judge saying, I'm going to put a stay on this, and then let's wait and see if another judge in another court decides to overturn that stay and put things back into jeopardy. Now, it was Santayana that said, those who refuse to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. It's time we learn from the last 2 years. I went through these news reports to show for us to learn that those who warned us about what was going on, those who said COVID is not as dangerous, the data doesn't support it, that the CDC is manipulating the information, that the dangers of the vaccine, the dangers of the mask are real, that we are being manipulated by fear. All of these things have shown up to be true. That the vaccines are not safe and effective, that they do have serious consequences, serious side effects, and they just plain don't work. Why? So that we can learn. because COVID works so well for the bureaucratic tyrants to take over the world, to impose their will on the rest of society, and even get the society to agree with them. Do you really think it won't happen again? Do you really think they would not take the opportunity of another dangerous disease to once again enslave us, to once again imprison us, to subject us to medical experimentation, to the deprivation of our rights? Because I found this article. And this came from the Epoch Times on February 20th. It was a warning that a highly pathogenic form of bird flu was detected in a backyard flock of chickens in Suffolk County, New York, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's right, a new bird flu. Highly pathogenic bird flu. But notice, right, they make a point, right? It's highly pathogenic. They're warning you, be warned, there's a new bird flu. Now, they've quarantined the animals, and the flock has not entered the food system. It was a small farm. Of course, then later in the article, you read little things like, no human cases of avian influenza have been detected in the United States. Yeah, no human cases. And recent detections of the virus in other states in February do not present an immediate health concern. So the very agency that says, highly pathogenic bird flu that hasn't infected a single human, and that, according to the agency, don't present an immediate health concern. And the USDA reminded people that the proper handling and cooking of poultry and eggs to an internal temperature of 165 degrees Fahrenheit kills bacteria and viruses. In other words, all you got to do is cook your food. This is the perfect setup for another scare campaign. All it will take is a single human case of avian flu, and we're off to the races again. Lockdowns, shutdowns, quarantines, masking, vaccinations, all of this will come roaring back. At least that's what I expect. If they can find just a single case of avian flu in the human population. Forget the fact that all you got to do is cook your food properly. That basic sanitation would solve all of this. This is the perfect setup for another lockdown, another takeover of the American people, of the people worldwide. Now, does that mean that will happen? No. It means it could. I mean, there's certainly a history of governments using hype around a disease, making it seem much more deadly and widespread than it actually is, as an excuse to rule the country with an iron fist. We're just coming out of 2 years of that. Maybe it's not the avian flu. Maybe it's something after that. The question is, will we learn the difference? Will we learn that those in government are not omniscient? They don't know everything. They are humans. They have all the same fallacies and foibles and failures that is common to the human race. Sure, there are people who will have a malignant intent and will use any excuse to assume power. There are others who will just get things wrong, but are unable or unwilling to admit that, and will continue to promote a hoax rather than admitting they were wrong. There are others that will simply be fooled by the information and repeat it so often that it simply becomes gospel. And there will be those who cannot stand, they will not abide anything that contradicts their narrative. All of these things are true because we're human beings. And simply getting a government ID or a government paycheck doesn't suddenly make you a better human being. In fact, since many people who are drawn to power are easily corrupted, I say that the chances of those higher up in the government being corrupt people is higher than average. So it's back to the American people. See, when you stop being dependent on government to tell you how to live your life, to tell you what to be afraid of, to tell you how to deal with problems, when you actually figure them out for yourself, when you actually do a little bit of your own research, when you trust but verify, as Ronald Reagan used to say, then you can live free. Then you aren't trapped by fear. How many cases of depression, alcohol abuse, drug abuse have come from the last 2 years of fear? And how many of us could have lived healthy, relatively normal lives if we'd simply bothered to find out for ourselves? How many people may not have had to die because we were so looking for a magic pill, a magic cure for the disease, that we were willing to be experimented on for something that really wasn't that dangerous to us? How many people died because of that? We may never know. The one thing I do know is that America in the 21st century is not nearly as free as it was in the 20th. And in part, that is because the American people were scared into handing over their birthright. You know, in the Bible, the story of Jacob and Esau. Now, Esau was the first to be born. He was Isaac's favorite. He had a birthright. Because he was the firstborn, he had a birthright. And he came out from the woods one day, and he was hungry. Some people believe he was afraid he was going to die. So when he saw his brother Jacob fixing a pot of lentils, he asked for some food, and Jacob said, "Sure, I'll sell it to you for your birthright." Esau did. That story easily parallels what's happened in America for the last 2 years. As an American, you have a birthright of freedom and liberty and rights protected by the Constitution of the United States. Yet we were convinced to be afraid and to sell our birthright for what we now know is just a pot of lentils. The American people, as a whole, have sold their liberty for a pot of stew. How do you feel now? Have you learned your lesson? Will you fall for the trickster the next time they try to scare you into believing it's the new bird flu or climate change? How about the idea that inflation is nothing to worry about? Will you sell your birthright to be protected for these things, from these things? Or will you at least take some time, put in a little effort, read a little bit more from different people with different points of view, and find out, make a decision on your own. Are things really that bad? The experiment in self-government that has been entrusted to the American people has taken a truly horrendous turn. Now, the good news is we're not done yet. We can turn the corner. We can return to self-government, to freedom and liberty, to the land of the free and the home of the brave. But we have to do it ourselves. We have to stop looking for someone to fix our problems for us. We have to stop looking for someone else to make all the boo-boos better. We have to grow up and be adults. Take responsibility for our actions, take responsibility for our decisions, and learn from them. See, then people coming along with the nasty COVID or the avian flu or whatever the next fear campaign is won't have power over you, because you will have the tools to double check before you, to verify before you buy in. Now, if you want to find out more, again, head to constitutionstudy.com. I write articles every week on all the different things going on. And if you want me to write, if you have an idea, well, just contact me there or you know, ask a question and say, Paul, can you answer this? I'll be more than happy to do it. But in the immortal words of Thomas Jefferson, if we wish to be ignorant and free, we want what never was and never will be. I also want to remind you that all my shows go to podcasts about a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. Do me a favor, go to Apple Podcasts, leave me a rating and review, and help other people find the Constitution and secure the blessings of liberty to themselves and their posterity.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.